League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Buying a car in Carvana was so easy. I was able to finance it through them.
Whoa, wait, you mean finance?
Yeah, finance. Got pre-qualified for a Carvana auto loan, entered my terms, and shopped from thousands of great car options all within my budget.
That's cool that financing through Carvana was so easy.
Financed. Done. And I get to pick up my car from their Carvana vending machine tomorrow.
Financed.
Right, that's what I said.
You can spend time trying to pronounce financing, or you can actually finance and buy your car today on
Carvana.
Financing subject to credit approval. Additional terms and conditions may apply.
Hello and welcome to The Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Luke Cutford.
Hello!
This week, we're talking about the AIDS epidemic. I don't have a joke for this one. Feels like it's in poor taste.
Yes.
But first, a Spotify update, which definitely isn't in poor taste. A little bit of positivity before we get into today's topic. We have hit over a million streams on Spotify.
Blimey.
It's pretty cool, isn't
That's so much science.
That's so much of it, and so many people streaming and listening to our words. How incredible. If you're listening on Spotify, it'd be really cool if you headed over to Apple Podcasts and left a five-star review. And followed us on Spotify. Do you have any followers? Do you want to know how many Spotify followers we've got?
I think we've got 41,000. 43,000.
778. Incredible.
Wow.
I've also got a question for everyone that's listening and watching. If you're using your ears and not your eyes and you're not on YouTube, get to YouTube, get down to the comments and answer this question. The question is, are you gay?
No.
Okay. Good to know. Let me know in the comments. So, this week's episode is about HIV and AIDS, and specifically the AIDS epidemic, because it's World AIDS Day on the 1st of December, which is the week that this video comes out.
Oh, happy December.
So before we actually cover the epidemic itself, we should probably have some understanding of what HIV and AIDS are, shouldn't we?
Yes, absolutely.
Do you have any understanding of what HIV and AIDS is?
So I know that HIV is a virus, mm-hmm. and AIDS is a condition that is caused sometimes, but not always, by the HIV virus. As in, AIDS is always caused by the HIV virus, but HIV does not necessarily lead to AIDS. It is a immunocompromisation condition.
Yeah,
AIDS, and it basically means that your immune system doesn't work very well, and you are then susceptible to all sorts of stuff, being much worse than normally is, and you can die from something as simple as a common cold.
Mm. Well, I'm not sure if you could die from something as simple as a common cold so much as you are far more likely to get something that is that you would only see in someone very old or very ill. So we should probably figure out what these words stand for, because that's a pretty bloody good description there, Luke. So HIV stands for human immunodeficiency virus. You're spot on. It's a virus. It attacks your immune system, specifically cells that make up your immune system. And AIDS is acquired immunodeficiency syndrome, or rather acquired immune deficiency syndrome. Exactly how you describe. Your immune system gets very weak, and it makes you more susceptible to a lot of infections and illnesses and things that you would usually be able to get over quite easily. So AIDS can't be transmitted from person to person. And again, AIDS comes from HIV. HIV doesn't always progress to AIDS. But also having HIV doesn't mean that you're necessarily going to infect other people. There are treatments and stuff we've got now. We'll get into that in a little bit. But HIV and AIDS, there is a difference between the two of them. As we've said, obviously HIV is a virus. AIDS is, I guess, the syndrome, the condition that can arise from the virus being left untreated. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
If you get diagnosed early and you get given treatments, you're likely to not develop AIDS or any AIDS-related illnesses in your sort of near normal lifespan. Like, where we are with HIV and AIDS right now is a pretty good place, especially considering where we were maybe 40 or so years ago. So let's just have a look at the stats. I say we're in a good place, but still, it's not great. So it's still a major public health issue. Over 40 million people have died from AIDS, just as like total, as far as we're aware. In 2021, 650,000 people died from HIV-related causes, and 1.5 million people got HIV. Yeah. So as we said, there's no cure, but there's treatments, and there were an estimated 38.4 million people living with HIV at the end of 2021, two-thirds of whom are in the World Health Organization African region. So essentially, in like two-thirds of the people living with HIV in the world are in Africa right now, which is there's been a massive, you know, we're talking about the AIDS sort of crisis of the 80s in the US, but there's also an AIDS crisis in you know, in other parts of the world that is still ongoing. So that is kind of an overview of where we are today with HIV and AIDS. Let's have a look at the symptoms. So if you're infected with HIV, usually you'll have a sort of short flu, a short flu-like illness for 2 to 6 weeks, the NHS says, after the infection, and that will last about a week or two itself. After those symptoms are gone, you might not have any symptoms of HIV for a long time. I think within maybe about a decade, untreated HIV is likely to turn into AIDS. But a lot of people...
Wow.
Yeah, within a decade.
I had no idea that it took that long. Oh, hang on. So it can take up to a decade.
I said within a decade.
But okay. So yeah, it could be much quicker.
Yeah, yeah. It can absolutely be much quicker. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So what, that's just to say that, like, you know, a lot of people can just not know that they've got HIV when they've been infected, because other than having what appears to be a flu for a couple weeks or for a week or so, you know, you might not have any other symptoms for a long, long time. If you think you've got HIV, you should get tested. It's very easy. I would have got tests today, but I forgot. You could get them from, I think, Terence Higgins Trust for like 15 quid. And you could maybe get them free as well. You could get finger prick tests that you just do yourself. It takes a very little amount of time. It's very easy. It's very affordable. Or you could go to a clinic, anything like that. You should just get yourself tested regularly as well if you're a high-risk group. What are some high-risk groups for HIV, Luke?
Oh, gosh. Probably people who are having sex with multiple people.
Mm-hmm.
Probably people who are having unprotected sex with multiple people. Mm-hmm. And I would imagine, although I think there's to a certain extent it's a misconception or preconception because of how it started, gay men are of a higher risk group. I would
technically, men that have sex with men are a higher risk group, just not necessarily because of anything to do with gay themselves.
Yes,
just
that's the crucial distinction. Yeah. The mode of sex.
Yeah. So I mean, intravenous drug users.
Yes, of course.
You know, intravenous drug users. Yeah, men who have sex with men. Generally, you would say they're high risk groups. Those would be the two sort of main ones that I guess would come to mind for most people. So if you're a member of either of those groups, just get tested regularly. You could also get on PrEP on the NHS, I think, which is a sort of preventative treatment.
I'm interested, like people like paramedics, would they be considered a higher risk group? Because they're frequently dealing with wounds and blood and bodily fluids in general. I'd imagine they get tested for that kind of stuff.
I mean, potentially, I'm not really sure. It says it's unlikely for ambulance clinicians to be exposed to a significant risk of HIV transmission within their routine clinical practice. Yeah, so they are not high risk groups. I mean, you got to bear in mind, it's not just being around that sort of stuff. It's like specifically situations wherein you are introducing it into the bloodstream relatively quickly. We'll get into why that's kind of important in a little bit. So those are the symptoms. Those are the sort of high risk groups. The cause, obviously, is sort of the transmission, really, isn't it? So HIV, you can find it in your bodily fluids if you're infected with HIV, obviously. So semen, vaginal and anal fluids, the NHS says, blood, breast milk. But it doesn't last very long outside of the body, which is why, like I said, it's kind of got to be transmitted relatively quickly because it can't last outside the body for that long. So It also can't be transmitted through sweat, urine, or saliva. And there's a lot of misconceptions, I think, when it comes to HIV and AIDS. So people think that HIV and AIDS are the same thing. They think they treat people with HIV as though they are, walking pathogen factories that are immediately going to give you HIV just by looking at you, which...
Like a basilisk.
Yes, like a basilisk, exactly. Which isn't the case, obviously. Obviously isn't the case. Even without treatment, you can't pass on HIV to someone else through saliva, let's say, and all of these other things. So you can kiss someone that has HIV and not get HIV, right?
Interest, quickly, sorry, before we move on. When you're talking about it can be in breast milk and also it can be in blood, like, can you get it by having breast milk, if you're a baby and you're having breast milk that's got HIV in it? Because that's obviously not going into your bloodstream, it's going into your stomach where there's acid, and hopefully that breaks it down to a certain extent. Because we know that there are like children who receive it from the parent, but that I would imagine is through the shared blood as opposed to then later on transmission via the breast milk.
There is a risk of transmission through the breast milk, apparently. But I'm looking at a few different places here. The CDC says that it can be transmitted through breast milk, and that breastfeeding contributes to the risk of perinatal transmission. Also during childbirth, there's body fluids flying around like everywhere. So there could be transmission happening then as well. And apparently if you have treatment, antiretroviral treatment, one of the treatments for HIV, that significantly reduces the risk of transmission through breast milk, but it is obviously not completely eliminated, but it is significantly reduced. Yeah.
Is that the ad bell? It is, but this time he's a ringing for Sci Guys Live in London. That is a live show that we, the Sci Guys, are going to be doing in London on Monday the 5th of December at a lovely little venue called Jamboree in King's Cross. So, if you want to see us do a live episode recording, and you want to get your hands on some never-before-seen merch, and you want to A us some cues to A in the Q&A, and you want to meet and or greet us, then go ahead and get your tickets at sciguys.co.uk/tickets. That's sciguys.co.uk/tickets. And on top of that, you can get yourself a cheeky little £5 discount if you go ahead and sign up to our Patreon for as little as £1 a month. So go ahead and get your tickets at sciguys.co.uk/tickets. That's sciguys.co.uk/tickets. Okay, let's get on with the show.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Yeah, so you can transmit HIV through breast milk, but you can also transmit HIV through sharing needles, syringes, other injecting equipment. I said during pregnancy, birth, breastfeeding. The chance of getting it through oral sex is really low, but it depends. I mean, realistically, it depends on whether you've got like open sores, oral hygiene, whether you're giving or receiving. Like, there's so many factors that come into it. Like, I mean, I've found a CDC page that lists all of the ways that you can transmit HIV, including the rare ones. Oral sex is on that list. Like, it's rare. Again, most of these sort of rare ways, what comes into it is either hitting mucous membranes. So, like, you know, like you would find that in your rectum. Like, there's the parts of your body that are like that basically transmit stuff across them, right? Like, very easily. And also then like open wounds, sores, things like that. So just getting straight into your bloodstream, right? Essentially, the idea is it needs to get into your bloodstream pretty quickly. That's why the main ways are, you know, obviously like injecting into your bloodstream and anal sex, because just based on the way that your GI tract works, things get into your bloodstream very quickly from there. And also there's the risk of tearing and opening up wounds in there. So I say wounds, like opening up sort of small cuts and whatnot. So again, the risks there are just higher. So that's kind of the cause of it. That's how it's transmitted. Let's talk a little bit about how it works. So it's a retrovirus. Do you know what a retrovirus is?
Oh gosh, A retrovirus?
A retrovirus, yeah.
No, I do not.
So a retrovirus is essentially just a virus that gets into your, that gets itself into your DNA. It just, it sticks
Ooh.
Itself in there. Yes, not, no, no bueno.
Boy.
Exactly. It writes itself in there. And this virus specifically, HIV, attacks the CD4 T lymphocytes, basically immune cells in your body. It basically causes their death. And it, look, put it this way. This is how viruses work. They get into a thing. They use that thing. I mean, thing, cell. Yeah. Viruses, that's not including... Yeah, bacteriophage. Okay, no, we're all good. Here's the thing. Whenever I try and describe something in biology, I need to make sure that I'm encompassing everything.
Yeah.
Or at the very least, highlighting the caveats to what I'm saying. I'm not going to do that right now.
So funny to watch you do that.
It's very difficult.
Like, live.
It's such a pain, honestly. So viruses will get into cells. They'll use the cell's apparatus to, like, basically make more viruses. And then they'll burst out of that cell and go and infect more. That's how they work, right? So they get into these cells and they kill them. And obviously killing off a bunch of immune cells, you're going to have immunodeficiency. So if you, obviously, if enough of these cells die... and it's infecting enough of your cells, all of that sort of stuff, your immune system is going to be quite severely affected. So once the CD4 count becomes too low, it says here, the immune system can't fend off infections and other sort of other and basically anything else that comes its way. And at that point, you would then start being described as having AIDS. So I think a CD4 count of less than 200 okay. So yeah, here it says the criteria for diagnosis of AIDS is an AIDS defining illness. So there are certain illnesses that, you know, they're called AIDS defining illnesses. There are certain illnesses that if you get them and you've got HIV, then that's enough to say, okay, at this point you have AIDS.
So,
it'd be probably something really rare, something that you would only really be able to get or have a serious effect on you if you had severe immunodeficiency.
Wow.
So there's that, but there's also a CD4 count of less than 200. So CD4, again, is this specific type of immune cell, right? So, as I said, most patients that are diagnosed with HIV, within 10 years, they will develop AIDS if untreated. However, you will likely not develop AIDS if you are treated, and their treatment nowadays in the UK at the very least is pretty easily accessible. So antiretroviral medications are used to treat HIV. They just stop the virus replicating the body. So you could be positive and undetectable because the levels of the virus are so low in your body that they literally cannot be detected. At that point, you can't then transmit it to other people. So they essentially stop the virus replicating, and the immune system can then repair itself, which kind of, you know, prevents any the damage from continuing on. And you basically take tablets every day, which obviously is not ideal, but if all you've got to do is take a tablet every day, and you've gone from, oh, I could end up with AIDS and die from any kind of illness that comes my way, to, oh, I just need to take a tablet every day and I live a relatively normal life.
Is the tablet that you take what you're talking about, if you've got HIV and you're trying to stop the replication in the body and allow the immune system to repair itself, is that the same tablet as the tablet you take to prevent you getting it, the PrEP tablet?
I'm not sure if the PrEP tablet is the same as the other one. I feel like it might be. Hold on, let me check.
There's a reason I'm asking that question, by the way.
So apparently PrEP and antiretrovirals are use the same drugs, but PrEP uses one less, apparently. So it's the same kinds of drugs. PrEP just has basically a slightly different formulation. It doesn't have one of them.
Yeah.
So one would assume then that the antiretrovirals are stronger. You know what I mean? That they've got that extra drug that PrEP doesn't contain in it. But it is the same basic thing. Yeah. So you're just essentially taking something that's going to stop this virus from replicating if it gets into your body. So, you know, even if you are exposed to HIV, it's not going to be able to, like, infect you, because... you're stopping it from replicating.
Okay, so that's interesting. So one thing that you said a minute ago, which really, really stuck out to me, which was that you are positive and undetectable, right? So my question there is then, like, well, if you're taking PrEP, if you're taking these drugs and you don't have HIV, now, you may not know the answer to this question. It's quite a specific question. But if, you, if you're taking these drugs and you don't have HIV, and then for whatever reason you do contract HIV, maybe you forget to take it for a day, or it doesn't work, you're the 0.00000001% of people it doesn't work for, or whatever, if that is a thing. Can you then be detected as having HIV because you're undetectable, right? You're taking this PrEP drug and you're positive and undetectable. So how do they ever detect it? Does that make any sense?
Oh, right. I see what you mean. I mean, I guess... I guess, okay, right. So here's the way this would work, right? Yeah. If you are taking PrEP and you say miss a day and then you get infected, I think in all likelihood, the way I think it's unlikely that you would then actually be infected with HIV.
Positive.
Just because
right.
you're just because you're exposed to HIV doesn't mean that you're necessarily going to be HIV positive. Yeah. You need to actually be infected. And let's say even missing one day, you know, I feel like from what I understand of it, I think you're probably going to be fine in terms of I don't think you're going to actually become positive.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. Check with your doctor, but there are emergency HIV treatments.
Yeah.
You know, if you have been exposed to HIV, and yeah, I don't know. I feel like if you're, especially if you're taking it every single day.
Yeah.
The difference in being sort of positive undetectable in that scenario from being negative, I think is probably going to be negligible.
And what an incredible drug to exist. The fact that like,
amazing.
We've gone from like exactly like you say, I know you've already said it, but like, you know, it is a minor inconvenience to have to take this thing, but the, like what it saves you from is just amazing. And the fact that you can have sex with people and not worry about whether they have HIV because you're not going to get it from them anyway.
Exactly. Right?
Obviously,
yeah.
People should still get tested, et cetera, et cetera. But
you like should take every precaution otherwise.
Yes.
But you then don't need to have that extra worry there. You've got that extra safety net.
Like, that is life-changing.
Absolutely. Amazing. Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, it took so long. Relative to do it, right? I mean, if we look at the mobilization around getting a vaccine out, you know, in what was it, 2021, 2020? The mobilization of that was insanely quick. The HIV, the AIDS stuff was a lot slower. Obviously, they're different things, so I'm not saying, you know, that we should have had a cure for AIDS like that immediately. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there was not overwhelming pressure from a certain government to do anything about this for some time.
Well, it was so heavily written off as the gay plague that the straight population were probably not quite so... Yeah,
exactly.
There was not quite the level of like political will there because it's like, oh, it's just happening to those people, so...
Yeah, literally.
What happened to me and my good traditional family?
We'll get into that. Oh, we will get into it. So, yeah, and that's the treatment there. So most people with HIV will take a combination of medicines, according to the NHS. You take them every day. It says it's vital that these are taken every day. But yeah, I mean, apparently HIV can develop a resistance to a single HIV medicine quite easily. But you take a combination of different medicines. Mm. That makes it less likely. And it says here, as I've said already, that the goal of treatment is to have an undetectable viral load, essentially meaning that you can't be detected as HIV positive using a test. So that is kind of how treatment works. We're at a really, really good point with treatment now. A really, really good point. I mean, that's not to say that AIDS and HIV aren't a problem at all, you know, but we are in such a better place than we were, you know, I mean, even 10 years or so ago.
Ah, but Corey, would you say that though we have a great position with our treatment, getting that treatment out to areas of the world where they need it most, is there a problem there perhaps?
Oh, are you saying that perhaps one of the great problems in our world is not so much that the resources do not exist, but that we are bad at distributing them?
Mayhaps I am saying this.
Interesting thought, Luke.
Maybe not bad at distributing them, just lack the will.
So, moving on from
we're
that.
We're actually quite good at distributing stuff as well. We have planes and things and rockets. We have rockets.
Yeah, we're quite good at it.
Yeah.
We are, aren't we? We just choose not to. So, where did HIV come from? Do you know where HIV came from, Luke?
Well, okay, look, if we were on QI, I'll say the thing that gets me the big klaxony buzzer thing.
Go for it.
HIV crossed over from monkeys to people because some guy slept with a monkey.
So it did come from chimpanzees in Central Africa. And apparently it could have jumped from chimpanzees to humans in the late 1800s, some studies show. So, you know, it's been around for quite a while. I mean, we think of it as a relatively new disease because of the sort of epidemic that happened in the 80s, but it has been around for a lot longer, and it is another zoonotic virus, as we've learned on this podcast before. Zoonotic viruses are they're the bad ones. They're bad. If you've got a virus that's learned how to be real good it's learned to be real good in one animal, that doesn't mean that it's going to be good in another animal. So look, the goal of like a really good virus does not necessarily just immediately kill its host, right?
Yeah.
And it wants to spread, right? Because it needs hosts to survive. So if you're killing off the entirety of your hosts, you're killing off yourself. What happens when a virus jumps from one species to another is essentially this virus is set up for one species. There are specific like sort of differences between species, obviously, and so a virus can be much, much, much worse for the species that it jumps into. That's the case for you know the pandemic that we had. It's the case for a lot of like big, scary diseases. They've jumped from one animal or one species to another, and is going to wreak havoc on the other species. I don't know how bad HIV is in like chimpanzee HIV is. I mean, like maybe it is as devastating as chimpanzee HIV. The H stands for human. I don't know how.
I mean, we have bird flu.
No, exactly. Right.
In humans.
Sure. Fine. I don't know how bad chimpanzee HIV is for chimpanzees. It could be equally as bad as it is for humans, but my point is that, you know, this is just another example of a virus that's jumped from one species to another, so which we see cropping up a lot.
It's what you're saying there. So, like, if I understand what you're saying there correctly, one of the sort of saving graces of viruses that we spoke about in the during the pandemic is that viruses actually don't want, in inverted commas, to be very deadly, because if they kill you before they replicate, then that's not good for them. That's like that's not good. So over time, some viruses become less deadly as they mutate because they then spread better, right? So that's what we saw in the pandemic, is like certain strains of the virus were actually less deadly because they didn't want to kill you, because they wanted to go undetected, so you just sneeze on each other.
Yeah, I think we need to be careful about applying anthropomorphizing viruses.
You know,
and I know that you understand. Yeah. I know that you understand. I just mean it's something we should be careful about. I think we got to remember that those mutations are random. Yeah. So any of these sort of random mutations could lead to a virus being less virulent, or less deadly, because that's somewhat beneficial for like under the certain circumstances. But then also a virus being very deadly could also be very very successful. You know, it just depends on the mode of transmission and, you know, and all of those different things. Like it's hard. This is the thing. It's very hard to pin down what is and isn't, I guess, sort of advantageous, because there are so many different scenarios. So I mean it can be advantageous to be far less deadly, you know, like, you know, a good virus I would say doesn't want to be, you know, a good virus wouldn't be incredibly deadly, because if it was incredibly deadly, it would be killing off its host before it managed to spread.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a balance to hit there, you know?
But is what you were saying that it, when it then jumps from, while it might not be particularly deadly in the species it's originally adapted for, one of its random mutations jumps it to a different host where it's entirely not designed for that host, is what you're saying that it can actually be much worse in that host because it's not had any sort of pressure, any of that sort of pressure?
Well, it's just that all I mean is that, you know, something that is less of an issue for one species could be more of an issue for another species, mm-hmm. because you know, one species has a certain adaptation that stops this specific virus, say, from being terribly deadly, you know, and this other species doesn't have that adaptation. All I'm trying to highlight here is that when a virus jumps from essentially one species to another, because there are there are these small differences or sometimes large differences between species, there, like, it follows obviously that there can be differences in how the virus sort of interacts with the body of the bodies of that new species. I'm not going to make a sort of like prescriptive statement of just like a blanket sort of yes, this is how it always happens. What I'm saying is that often we do see that there that, you know, it can be a lot worse for the species that this virus jumps into. For a myriad reasons. So HIV came from chimpanzees. It's a version of the simian immunodeficiency virus. And it was not passed on through sex, in all likelihood. It was probably passed on through meat. If you were hunting chimpanzees for meat, and then coming into contact with their infected blood. And then, it, you know, it slowly spread across Africa and to other parts of the world. And it's been in the US since at least the late 1970s, mid to late 1970s. We obviously only started to hear about it in the US in the 80s, but it has been around since the 70s. So that's kind of like a background on HIV and AIDS. Now we get to dive into the AIDS epidemic, the AIDS crisis, the HIV crisis of the 80s in the United States. It's a big one. It is not a fun topic, but here we go. So June 5th, 1981, the CDC published a report. Essentially what happened here is that there were five men in LA that were previously healthy. They were young guys, and they all had this really, really sort of deadly disease, pneumocystis carinae pneumonia. It's a very specific kind of pneumonia, right? That you wouldn't expect to see, in someone of that age who was otherwise healthy at all. It was like, it was very, very odd, especially because there were five young men in LA that all had this sort of same the same deadly disease. And there were also like a spike in cases of a specific sarcoma, Kaposi's sarcoma. And, you know, and like it, essentially what was happening here is that the beginnings of this were a bunch of reports of otherwise very healthy young people, mostly men, otherwise very healthy, actually I say mostly men, otherwise very healthy young men, suddenly becoming very ill with diseases that you wouldn't expect to see in healthy young men. So that kind of was how it began. And then, you know, there were these outbreaks of these diseases that I sort of mentioned, which were usually rare, but they're very deadly, and they were associated with immune suppression. And so they all kind of started randomly appearing, or very rapidly rather appearing in a specific population. So that then led to the idea of there being a gay plague. And like, people were saying, this is God condemning you for your homosexual actions, blah 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 blah. But you gotta remember the difficulty of this. You know, it is running through the gay community. People don't exactly know how it's being spread. People don't know what's going on. All they know is that there is this illness that that can make you die very, very quickly, you know? And the difficulty as well, remember, is that it could be up to 10 years, post-infection before you develop AIDS. So, you know, it's not like you're going to know exactly where this came from. And on top of that, to add to all of this, just like, you know, this is before you could be diagnosed with HIV or anything, but what you did know is that if you got like this, if you got this sort of this plague, if this plague had like struck you, you would essentially be outed as gay. And this was in the 80s the US. Yeah. So not only are you at risk of dying in that sense, you're also very much at risk of being outed, because at this point it is pretty much only, as far as I'm aware, only infecting gay men.
Ding-a-ling-ling, is that the ad bell? It is, and he's asking you if you've gotten your tickets for Sci Guys Live in London yet. The live show that we, the Sci Guys, are doing in London on Monday the 5th of December. So go ahead and get your tickets at sciguys.co.uk/tickets. Otherwise, you might miss out on such lovely things as a live episode recording, meets and greets, Q's and A's, and also merch that has never been seen before. So go and get your tickets at SciGuys.co.uk/tickets, and don't forget to get yourself £5 off by checking out our Patreon and signing up for as little as £1 a month. There you go, SciGuys.co.uk/tickets. Let's get on with the show.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
So that was the beginnings of, you know, the HIV crisis. And, you know, this started, as I said, in 1981, June 5th, 1981. And in 1982, the autumn of 1982, the CDC described it as AIDS for the first time. There was a new, that was the new name, because the old name was pretty bloody homophobic.
Oh, dear God.
Yeah, do you know what
no,
it was?
I don't know what it was.
It was initially gay-related immune deficiency.
Gay-related immune deficiency. I mean, yeah, I mean, that's what it looked like at the time.
But also, let's avoid trying to... This is the issue, right? It's calling it gay-related immune deficiency is a very... It's a very odd way of phrasing that, because it's not necessarily related to...
Being gay. You can be gay, and like, there are gay people who do not have anal sex.
Yeah, absolutely.
And therefore would not really be at any more risk than anybody else.
Exactly.
For contracting AIDS.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it was only happening amongst gay men, but calling it gay-related immune deficiency is just, as a medical term,
yes,
it just seems so odd, because it's not necessarily medically relevant that they are gay. It is medically relevant how they were infected. And yes, you could follow that down the line. And it's because they're gay men having sex with other gay men, right? Generally, and obviously in this conversation, we're talking primarily about cis men. But, you know, that makes up the majority of the population of gay men anyway. So in general, because we're talking about trends here, in general, yeah, it's gay men having sex with gay men. That's how it's being transmitted amongst those groups. So I understand why it was called gay-related immune deficiency. I also fully disagree with it, because maybe let's keep medical definitions away from class, like with things like, you know, sexuality and I guess like sort of race and whatnot. You know, it just seems so easy to. It's very irresponsible.
Yeah.
If anything, right? So. They changed the name from gay-related immune deficiency to AIDS in 1982. That's when they started describing it as AIDS. And they're like, you know, people were not really sure how to cover it. Like, some people didn't want to give it too much attention because gay. But like, it was one of those things where the government wasn't really talking about it at all. Like, the Reagan administration was near enough silent on it for a long, long time. You know, Reagan himself, I'm pretty sure, didn't say anything about it until 1985. And this started, it started in 1981.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. The president of the United States said nothing.
That's a whole term.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a whole term of office. So you just don't mention it.
Exactly. And the CDC described it in 1982. The New York Times reported on the mysterious illnesses in July 1981. And then it was 2 years after that that AIDS was given a front page story. That was May 25th, 1983. By that point, almost 600 people had died. Mm-hmm. And it does. The numbers don't sound huge, but you got to think about this being 600 out of a much smaller population. And also, they don't necessarily know what's going on. And on top of that, only 600 people have died, but how many people are infected? Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Because this, again, it could take up to 10 years. So how long ago were these people infected? It could have been years prior.
People being aware of like you say, because it takes 10 years, people being aware of the possibility that...
It takes up to 10 years.
Up to 10 years, sorry, yeah. People being aware of the possibility that there's lots of people infected with this, and in order to be able to take further precautions, like, this is not like a lot of other illnesses we have. You don't normally have an incubation period of up to 10 years before you actually get the problems from the illness.
Exactly, yeah.
So being quiet about it in this specific situation is especially bad.
Exactly. So and it's one of those things where it only became a massive problem because they decided to not do anything about it. You know, and when I say it only became a massive problem, I mean, if something had been done about this sooner, many, many lives could have been saved, right? So, you know, that's kind of bringing us on to the Reagan administration. So they just didn't really want to cover it. Government officials didn't really talk about it. There was a White House press briefing in October of 1982 where Lester Kinsolving, who was a conservative journalist, questioned Larry Speaks, who was the press secretary for President Reagan. He basically asked him about the president's reaction to AIDS. And let me just read out this exchange for you. This is when 1,000 people had died from AIDS, by the way, already, 1982. So Lester says, and Lester is the reporter, bear in mind. So the reporter says, does the president have any reaction to the announcement by the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta that AIDS is now an epidemic in over 600 cases? Larry, this press secretary, says, AIDS, I haven't got anything on it. The reporter asks, over a third of them have died. It's known as a gay plague. Press pool laughter.
Oh.
Yeah. No, it is. It's a pretty serious thing. One in every three people that get this have died, and I wonder if the president was aware of this. The press secretary says, I don't have it. Press pool laughter again. So this is like, when I say press pool, I mean the reporters and whatnot, all the press in the room started laughing as though these were jokes. So you know, Larry, the press secretary, says, I don't have it. Everyone laughs. And he says, do you? And the reporter says, you don't have it? Well, I'm relieved to hear that, Larry. Everyone laughs. And then Larry, the press secretary, asks again, do you? No, I don't. Oh my God. Didn't answer my question. How do you know? Everyone laughs again. And the reporter asks, does the president, in other words, the White House, look on this as a great joke? The press secretary says, no, I don't know anything about it, Lester. And there were like more jokes back and forth, people not caring about AIDS throughout this sort of this press conference.
That sounds like a press conference version of going, you're gay. No, I'm not. You're gay.
No, it literally is. That was it. That's what just happened.
I'm not gay. Are you gay? I'm not gay.
That's literally what just happened.
That's insane.
Yeah. And so it wasn't just throughout this conference. It was like, it continued beyond that. I mean, even after over 4,000 people had died, here is, audio. Here is like a transcript from, you know, 1984. So what, that's like 2 years later. So this is the same. This is the same press secretary, obviously.
Larry Speaks.
Exactly. Larry Speaks, although I'd wish Larry would not speak. And this is the same reporter again. So I'll just read these out to you. So Larry Speaks, the press secretary, says, Lester is beginning to circle now. He's moving up front. Go ahead. Lester, the reporter, asks, since the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta report is going to press pool laughter. He was cut off by everyone laughing. And the press secretary says, this is going to be an AIDS question. And the guys continue trying to talk. He's saying that an estimated, the press secretary says, you were close. And the reporter then asks, can I ask the question, Larry, that an estimated 300,000 people have been exposed to AIDS, which can be transmitted through saliva, which isn't true, by the way. Will the president, as commander-in-chief, take steps to protect armed forces, food, and medical service from AIDS patients or those who run the risk of spreading AIDS in the same manner that they bed typhoid fever people from being involved in the health or food services? And apparently, whilst this question is being asked, people are laughing. Essentially what he's asking here is, are we going to stop the people that have got the AIDS from being able to be involved in all of these things, lest they infect the rest of us, because it can be spread through their saliva? Which, false.
Can't
be. Yeah. And maybe they didn't know at the time, but it can't be. But also, whilst he was saying all of this, people in the room were just laughing. At this point, over 4,000 people had died.
Mm-hmm.
And they're laughing. Like, that's ridiculous, like actually ridiculous. This conversation goes on. The press secretary says a little highlight. He says, I haven't heard him express concern with regard to the president. So the president apparently had not expressed any concern 3 or so years into this epidemic where 4,000 people had died. I've not heard him express anything. I haven't asked him about it. Not even bothered to ask.
Yeah.
The press secretary has already been asked about AIDS
and HIV. Been
doing
for 3 years.
Has not bothered to ask the president, apparently. And then, you know, some more jabs at the end. Will you ask him, Larry? Have you been checked? Is the president going to ban mouth-to-mouth kissing? What? Pardon? I didn't hear your answer. It's hard work. I don't get paid enough. Is there anything else we need to do here? This is just a group of blokes joking about whilst people are dying.
Do you think the, out of interest, you've read this this stuff with the reporter in your research. Is the reporter trying to do a good job and everyone is obstructing him, or is the reporter kind of joking along too?
So from
at least
what
he's asking the questions. Like that's the idea that he's asking a question that everyone else wants to sort of ignore is that's a good thing. That's what the press should be doing.
Yeah, I mean, I guess apparently he's a conservative, but yeah, I think as far as I'm aware, he wasn't taking it terribly seriously.
Yeah,
I think he was laughing along with them. Yeah, I mean, I'm not entirely sure. I don't want to slander this man.
Yes, sure.
But yeah. It says he was a conservative journalist or a conservative reporter. You know, so I'd hazard a guess as to saying that he was probably a little bit in on the joke. Like, yes, he's asking the questions, but also, I'm really not sure. Regardless. The entire press pool laughing, the way that this wasn't taken seriously. Like, these are two separate interviews, like two years apart. Yeah. Three, like the latest one being 3 years after.
And they start laughing before he even asks his question.
Exactly.
They're like, oh, we know what's coming. Ha, 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 ha. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, funding for AIDS research was really difficult to get. You know, to the first federal funding, from the federal government, it was coupled with toxic shock syndrome and Legionnaire's disease in a public health emergency trust fund. So there wasn't even specific funding given towards AIDS research. It had to be wrapped up with other things to get it to pass through.
Yeah.
Apparently, this left public health experts frustrated. I've got a quote here. The inadequate funding to date has seriously restricted our work and has presumably deepened the invasion of this disease into the American population, a CDC staffer wrote in an April 12, 1983 memo to Dr. Walter Dowdle, who was the assistant director of the CDC at the time. In addition, the time wasted pursuing money from Washington has cast an air of despair over AIDS workers throughout the country. And by the end of the year, the country had, and again, I'm just reading this as a quote, by the end of the year, the country had 4,700 reported cases of AIDS and more than 2,000 deaths. Like, this was 1983, right? So nearing 5,000 people, 5,000 reported cases. Bear in mind, the actual case is going to be way higher than that, and more than 2,000 deaths. And then Reagan decides to actually say something.
Congratulations, Reagan.
Guess what year?
I think you told me, didn't you? 1970.
This is taking place in the 80s.
87?
1984.
Okay.
He's a little bit better than you expected. Huh. Yeah. But like 1984, yeah, he actually says something about it. But I mean, I don't like it, his response even then was not great. I mean, he said it was a top priority. He was responding to a reporter's question. Oh, sorry, 1984. Sorry, it was 1985 when he first publicly spoke about it. 1985 in response to a journalist, he said it was a top priority. Congress then allocated just under $190 million for AIDS research, and that was $70 million more than was requested. But also that same day, Rock Hudson, who was close with Reagan, died from AIDS, and apparently that just shot it like right into the zeitgeist, everyone's aware of it at that point. Yeah, so I mean, Reagan finally pulled his finger out and started to do something about it. I mean, he was put under a lot of pressure, so he mentioned it in 1985. I think in 1986 his Surgeon General was kind of pushing for it says a coordinated response to AIDS. Mm-hmm. And then in 1987, I think, was when things actually started to move forward. You got to remember, throughout all of this, local authorities, like sort of local governments and whatnot, were doing what they could. But without the federal sort of, without the support from, like, you know, the higher government, it's really bloody difficult to do anything. And, you know, at this point, like, people were using this for homophobia. People were, like, refusing. I mean, homophobia was already bad enough. Mm-hmm. But the idea that gay people were, you know, inherently, like, disgusting or infectious was so bad for that homophobia in that it just made it so much worse. So yeah, they ended up responding to the AIDS crisis far, far too late. I mean, this is 1987 when things start happening. Yeah, yeah, 6 years. 6 years to respond to this in a significant way. And by that point, 47,000 people had been infected with HIV in the United States. And it, you know, you can see those numbers. It shot up from about sort of 4,700, you know, I think maybe like what, 1983 to 4 years later, like 47,000. Mm-hmm. Like it just shot up. I mean, we're probably getting better at testing. More people were aware of it and like and getting themselves checked. And, you know, like, so obviously the numbers are going to go up, but 47,000 people just because they did not do anything. And to say that they didn't do anything just out of apathy, yeah, makes sense. But also, if gay people are dying and you're a homophobe, it's probably in your best interest, isn't it? Like, I mean, like, genuine. And they only did something about it when they could not ignore it anymore. And that is the HIV epidemic.
Oh.
There you go.
Well, thanks, Corey.
You're welcome.
That was just wonderful. And the thing is, as well, is that we're talking about the US AIDS epidemic. Obviously, we had an epidemic. We had the same situation in the UK. I forget the year. There's a wonderful TV show called It's a Sin, all about that period. It's wonderful. And we're just talking there about like 47,000, was it, people in the United States. Mm-hmm. People are flying around the world. People are like they're exporting this virus elsewhere. And so that number's even bigger.
Yeah.
And it's already come over from other countries as well. So, like...
Exactly.
Great
and
job,
also,
Reagan.
Because there could be such a long period between, you know, being infected and developing AIDS, people could, like, there are...
The number could be way higher.
Could be way higher. Yeah. Exactly. It's honestly ridiculous. But do you want me to cheer you up with a little quick fire quiz?
Dun, 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 dun. AIDS epidemic, US edition.
Please. Well, the rules for the quickfire quiz are the same as always, Luke. I'll ask one question. That's one question between you and the audience. The first person to answer the question correctly after we've finished asking the question wins. And what do they win, Luke?
They win nothing.
Oh, thank God.
A little prep test.
Yes.
No, not prep test. HIV test.
A little HIV test.
Yeah, from the Terence Higgins Trust.
There you go. We will not be sending them out, but you can get one yourself.
Yes.
In fact, you probably should. Go ahead and do it. Send a picture to us on Twitter at SideGuysPod. So the question for you is... What does HIV stand for?
It stands for human immunodeficiency virus.
Ding, ding, ding. That
Hooray!
Is correct. If you beat Luke, let us know down in the comments. Luke, how do you feel?
I feel fan-bloody-tastic. I thought you were going to ask me what AIDS stood for, so I was sitting there with that in the forefront of my mind, and then you changed it up.
I mean, okay, here we go. What does AIDS stand for?
Acquired immunodeficiency syndrome.
Actually, acquired immune deficiency syndrome? I made the mistake at the start. I'm sorry.
Well, I feel bad.
That is all from us, but before we go, we'd like to thank all of our patrons with a very special thank you to executive producers Dinito and Glitch Rabbit, and thank you for listening. You can find the full references for this episode down in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Monday, and why not leave us a nice wee review? Support the pod at patreon.com/sideguys, or you can find and contact us at sideguyspod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and at sideguys on TikTok too. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com. SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
You can follow me at NotCore everywhere.
You can follow me at LukeCutforth everywhere.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.